Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Utah Liberty Talk. That sounds the same as it always does. The exact same. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to once more an additional episode of your favorite Utah-based libertarian podcast, Utah Liberty Talk. Thanks for listening today, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to be doing this episode not on something that directly pertains to Utah. Of course, I'm going to give you a second to take a guess, if you haven't already cheated and read the title, to what this episode may be about. What's going on? Oh, yeah, you probably guessed it. Russia has invaded Ukraine. Holy cow. Yeah, so Ukraine was expressing interest in joining NATO, and Russia didn't like it, and so they decided to kick down their door. They kind of said they weren't going to. Their actions obviously spoke louder than their words. I'm not going to lie, I thought Putin was bluffing. I stand corrected. And so now Ukraine's being invaded. There are sanctions on Russia, but the United States is not sending troops there. And we are going to go ahead and dive into this. We're going to be talking about a few different sections of this. First, we're going to be talking about the history of why this tension is here. We're going to be talking about what has led up to this point in recent times. We're going to be talking about where we are in terms of the war, and what is going on in terms of the conflict and the violence and the fighting. And then we're going to be talking about what this means for us, what we can do, and how this meshes with libertarian, non-interventionalist, or isolationist principles. So, with that being said, let's dive right into the history of why we have this conflict here and now, and how it all started. You know, what's interesting about all this is a lot of people are saying, oh, World War III, World War III. There might end up being some validation to that. So, let's just look at a trend real quick, right? This directly traces back to World War II. But we can also look back at World War II and be like, oh, yeah, this is kind of a result of World War I. Makes sense, kind of, that all of these things would just be continuations of tensions that have happened through tragedies and massive wars before. So, I mean, here we are, you know, dealing with this. So where did it all start? You know, we're going to disregard World War I right now, just because that's not where the nitty-gritty really happens. You know, this is something that is pretty strong right around the time of World War II. So there was heavy issues between the United States and Russia during a little bit and after World War II. This is because the United States had joined the war late, as we have done so with world wars. And we had pretty much let Russia take the brunt of the conflict. Now, historically, when it comes to wars, Russia has been a very aggressive country. When the Germans originally surprise attacked Russia, they were, Germany was pushing pretty good into Russia, but you know how Russians are in the winter time. They ended up being surrounded and just completely bombarded until they decided to surrender, but Russia, when Germany was marching to Stalingrad, I mean, it was ridiculous. Russia had so many people there defending Stalingrad. I think it was like 2 million. Like the Russian casualties, I want to look this up. Russian casualties defense. So this is when Stalin was Stalin was dictator. So, the Germans were pushing into Russia pretty deep, and they were about to reach Stalingrad. Now, with this city being named after Stalin, of course, the current dictator, this could not be taken over. It was an extremely deadly war. I mean, it was catastrophic. The unintended consequences and what do they call it in war? Collateral damage. Yeah, that's what they say. Collateral damage of this battle was just ridiculous. So about 800,000 German, well, mostly German fighters died in this battle, and were missing or captured. Soviet, well, Russian defense, there was about 1 million, I believe, that died defending Stalingrad, and there was like a whole bunch of civilians that died. And it was so bad that they were sending out people to go defend Stalingrad that didn't even have weapons. And they said, go and defend this, and if you don't have a weapon, pick one off of a dead Russian because you will find one. That's how bad it was. So and they were just sending their people to die. So anyways, my point in saying this is historically, Russia does not care. They will send everyone to die defending, Stalingrad, their land, their pride, whatever it might be. I mean, they do not joke around. Russia will let all of their people die before, they give something up. So we let Russia, and this was before the United States entered the war. This was a surprise attack on Russia after they had a treaty. But the United States let Russia take the brunt of the brunt of the war. They let Russia take the they let them do what they were gonna do. They were basically like, if you've ever seen Ozark, and you know that the cartel is just pushing Marty Bird to wash this money, like by the skin of his teeth, he's barely able to pull everything off, doing these crazy things. I mean, that's kind of how the United States was being with Russia. They were like, hey, we're going to, I mean, we're going to start attacking on Italy, even though Hitler was enemy number one. They started with Italy. And that was something that Franklin Delano Roosevelt had agreed with Stalin on. They agreed, hey, Hitler's going to be enemy one, even though Japan brought us into this war. So, but they attacked first in Italy, and they were even doing stuff in northern Africa as well, where Italy had expanded across the Mediterranean. So Russia was dealing with the Germans almost single-handedly. I mean, even Britain had moved troops to go and unite with the US fighting in these places, and diverted them from the efforts against Germany. And they were pretty much just letting, I mean, they were making Russia fight for their lives, doing this. And they were just like, oh yeah, we're just gonna do these little do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do down in Italy. And Russia is like hanging on for dear life. So eventually, the Allies are like, okay, maybe we should try and take back France. And so, they start intervening a little bit more with Germany, start pushing back. But Russia was very bitter about this. And so when it came time that the Allies, and the Allies were France, the United Kingdom, the United States, and Russia, and then the Axis powers were primarily, and those are primarily, of course, it's a world war because Australia was involved, I believe. But anyways, and then the Axis powers were Germany and Italy for the most part, and I believe Spain was in on some of it, and there may have been another country or two somewhere in Europe. But, Russia was not happy about it. So by the time the Allies win the war, Russia is just, they're just not happy. And to be frank, like, I kind of can't blame them. But this is a whole situation where it's like, okay, you get attacked. Like, obviously you're kind of expected to defend yourself. And it's probably even more likely that you'll continue to push on. But even then, you're at least expected to defend yourself. But, the international community was much different then than it is, based off of libertarian principles. So it was like, okay. You kind of screwed us over. You guys were supposed to help us and you guys kind of hung us out to dry. You let all these people die. Not that Russia really cared about the people dying more than they cared about their pride, but you let all these people die and this is hard to answer for. So, Russia was pretty pissed about it, and by the time the Allies won, it was about time to split up Germany. So Germany was split into four different pieces. One was maintained by Great Britain, one was maintained by France, one was maintained by the United States, and one was maintained by Russia. Each of the main powerful allies, other than France, because they are not powerful. They never were. Well, they were. Okay. They were decently powerful in the 1700s, early 1800s, too. Really, most of the 1800s. Well, I don't know. That gets complicated when you talk about the French Revolution, but 1800s, too, because Napoleon did kick some butt out there. So yeah, I mean, yeah, France is a pretty good force to be reckoned with. But anyways, so Russia's not happy, and they're pretty much like hanging on to, they're hanging on to, I mean, eventually, the rest of the allies other than Russia are like, okay, we can give this back to Germany. It's kind of like reconstruction. We're like, okay, they can handle themselves now. I think that they've had their punishment. And so, as we get into the 1980s, and this is for a long time. This is like 30 years, even longer actually. So when we get into the 80s, like 35 years, when we get into the 80s, well, actually probably closer to 34 because the end war ended at the end of 1945. But anyways, in like the 1980s, 19 early 1990s, like that's when the Soviet Union really starts to tank and go downhill. That's when people are like, yo, look at all these other people in the world. They got like free speech and they can like publish books and watch television that's not controlled by the state. And look at their toasters, they're way better than ours. We kind of want to do that now, So, and I, real quick detour, real quick, this is totally off topic. But they had a system in the Soviet Union because they needed jobs so badly that they would have like one person, like you go to a bakery and get bread, they'd have one person like get the bread for you, and then they would have one person ring you out to pay because they were at such a loss for jobs. And so I used to make jokes to my dad about that when we'd go through a drive-through at a place. I'd be like, they have the first window to pay and the second window to go through and get your food. Yeah, that's just because we were at a loss for jobs. So I kind of made a joke about my dad to that. But anyways, so it was kind of reconstruction. The Soviet Union was failing, so they kind of went hands off on Germany a little bit, but they were very reluctant to let it go. Ultimately, President Gorbachev dropped the wall. And that happened during the Clinton administration, although many credit Reagan for the negotiations and leaps in friendships that he had made with Gorbachev. So, and this will come back later actually, because there was a specific treaty that Reagan and Gorbachev had negotiated when it comes to weapons that Russia seems to have possibly gone back on. And I want to make sure I can get the source for that before we get to that point. But anyways, so they dropped the wall, they let Germany reunify. Believe that was in 1989, 1990. And so that happened. Well, what happened between then? Because that was a long time for Russia to be holding on to Germany. This is what many of us call, well, this is what is known as the Cold War. And the Cold War has so many fiascos involved, it is not even a joke. It was just this, friendly competition between capitalism and communism to see, who could show the, pardon my French here, but who could show they had the biggest dick and, outperform each other. is where we got the space race from, you know. I mean, Russia, had the first, earthly object in space. Russia put the first dog in space. Russia put the first human in space. Russia had the first satellite to orbit the Earth. But the United States made it to the moon, so we win the space race. And even then, there's speculation that the first moon landing is faked. And to be honest, I believe that. But anyways, we're not really, I mean, I think we've been there since, but I think the first one was fake. But we're not gonna go too far into that because apparently we won the space race anyways. I think we probably lost it anyways. Not that it matters because we had a lot better things to be spending money on. I mean, if it's about Russia's pride, they will use every resource possible to and put it and direct it there. I mean, how have we not learned this already? I mean, Russia, when it comes to their pride, they will take no heed from no man. But anyways, so there's a lot of tension between the United States and Russia, and most of it is resonating because of the way that the United States hung Russia out to dry in World War II, and it creates this, hatred between capitalism and communism. The United States has this, McCarthyism, high persecution and anti-communist rhetoric. And so, Russia and the United States, they have tensions, and Russia is trying to spread communism. And the first example we saw of this was shortly after World War II in the Korean War. And the Korean War happened about 4 or 5 years later. I think 4 and a half to be more accurate, but happened later. It was about 3 years, and it was when the North Korean people government, not really too sure exactly what the structure was, wanted to invade the South and unite the Korean Peninsula under communism. So South Korea is like, no, we don't want to be invaded. Somebody help us, please. And the United States is like, is that a threat from communism? We will save you. So the United States sent troops to Korea, and we're fighting this war, ended up working it out, splitting the peninsula pretty much in half. And so, that was a huge puppet war. I mean, Russia and the United States were pumping money and money and money and money and money into it. I gotta search this up because I'm not sure. I've never done too much research on the Korean War. Let's see, did Russia fight in the Korean War? They were not, this is according to Wikipedia, reliable source. They always tell you that it's not in school, but I definitely think that it is because everything is cited at the bottom. So they weren't officially like involved, but they played a significant role in the conflict. So that probably means providing weapons, ammunition, intelligence, economic resources, and things of the sort to support the North Koreans in invading South Korea. So, the United States said, I mean, we had guys in the ground on the Korean War though, and that's what's so interesting about this is Russia. What I find super interesting about the Cold War is that we had multiple puppet wars. We had the Korean War and the Vietnam War are really what stick out, And the same thing happened in the Vietnam War. Let's see. I'm not sure. I gotta figure out this too. So China was another country to adopt communism very early. Okay, so China was one of the nations to adopt communism really early, and that's kind of like what has established China and Russia's alliance and relationship is, and it's lasted as far as it has until today. But China had a massive cultural revolution, shortly after World War II, which is funny because China had just decided to take on communism. Even though, we totally saved them from Japan. I mean, we had totally saved them from Japan. I mean, China was getting their crap wrecked by Japan. And we came in and we were like, yeah, we're gonna help you guys. And how does China repay us? Well, they have a huge cultural revolution, kill all the old people, get rid of art, and become communist. And now they're like probably the biggest threat in the world to us today. So, anyways, China had a volunteer army. This is according to Inquiries Journal, but China had a volunteer army on the ground assisting North Korean forces. So, I mean, China was directly involved. Russia was not necessarily in terms of putting troops on the ground, but they were helping significantly in other ways. And then when it comes to the Vietnamese War, the United States, I mean, it was held by France. France is like, yo, we can't hold on to this anymore. They're becoming too influenced by communist ideology. We just need to let it go. And so they let it go. And I believe that was in like 1955. They were, a few like stations were taken out by guerrilla fighters. They're like, okay, yeah, we're done with this. So the same thing happens. North Korea decides to invade, or sorry, North Vietnam decides to invade South Vietnam. South Vietnam's like, eh, we want to become communist. So the United States was like, we'll help you. And so they send troops there. And so the guerrilla tactics that the and so it's kind of so guerrilla tactics are basically like unconventional manners of war, hiding a lot of troops. The Vietnamese were big in underground tunnels, hiding in the trees, hiding in the bushes, cheap shots, I guess you could say. So and the United States is unfamiliar with the jungle, of course. So and I've gotten to hear great stories about this. My grandpa, he was in Nam, and he used to tell me just the most crazy stories about the kind of stuff that he did. And he, like myself, I think this is an attribute that I didn't know that I really had originated from him, but he was in Nam for specific reasons and. He almost lost his life. He ended up getting a Purple Heart, and he had gone home for a little bit and then needed to go back out or decided to go back out. I'd have to talk to my grandma and see which one it really was, but he decided to go back out, and his mission from there on was to help save as many people as possible on both sides when it came to the villages. And I never asked him about, what horrible things he might have done over there. There's some things that you just don't want to make a person relive. But I know that he had that change, and I know that he had become very much a person of peace and wanting to save people and avoid, he would disobey commands because he knew that way too many people would get killed, or anyone would get killed really. And so they started calling him Moses. And so he had a very big like aura of anti-violence around him. And I think like in the later years when I really started to learn more and understand more, like I really started to pick up on that. And so and as I've gotten even older and remember the kind of stuff that he's told me about that, it's resonated so much with me. So, anyways, the Soviets did supply like a ton of weapons. Like the North Vietnamese were using AK-47s, which is a Russian firearm, arguably the greatest firearm to be ever made. Depends on who you ask. I personally have an AR-15. That's just because I think it's better in the States. But there's a great argument behind the AK-47. And so, anyways, Russia had helped. I'm not even gonna go find out about China, but Russia had helped the North Vietnamese who wanted to take over the South. The South were communist. And so, basically, the United States, they were fighting this puppet war. And I believe it was in the, like before that, it was probably about 10 to 8, 8 eh, 7 to 10 years before that. Cuba fell to communism, and then there was a whole freak out because Cuba was 90 miles away from the coast of Florida, and people were like, oh my gosh, like communism is this close. This is crazy. JFK tried the Bay of Pigs. It did not go well. Tried to invade Cuba, and it just ended horribly. It was so bad. It was so bad. So, anyways, there's been tons of puppet wars fought between the United States and Russia. And during this time of the Cold War, where we weren't actually conflicting with each other, but we had the space race and the nuclear arms race, and we were building these huge nuclear arsenals and weapons and systems and all this kind of stuff to make sure that we couldn't outgun the other, and each one was posing a threat to each other. We, had all these situations. With the wars and with threats. I mean Russia almost nuked the United States because a bear broke into a facility, which is pretty crazy to think about. But anyways, we had all these things going on in the Cold War, and so the United States had organized in Europe the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. And so that consisted of all sorts of different countries in the region: Great Britain, France, probably Germany. Let's see, NATO. So I'm not gonna go too far into NATO members and when they joined. Screw that. Anyways, so we've got tons of. I mean, I am like to half an hour here, and I'm not even done with the first of four sections. So I gotta speed this up a little bit. So anyways, the US expands NATO, Cold War ends, US is still expanding NATO, and Russia's like, hey guys, this is supposed to be over, you guys are expanding NATO. Russia's like, oh yeah, no, we're just doing NATO, NATO was made to prepare for, against Russia and possibly intimidate them. Russia didn't like it, and so when the USSR dissolved, the United States didn't dissolve NATO, and Russia had a problem with it. So, yeah, basically, that is, and so Ukraine wanted to join NATO. There's a lot of former Soviet nations that are members of NATO, and we're gonna get into that in probably the last section of this. But Ukraine had expressed interest in becoming part of NATO, and Russia was already tense about NATO because the United States had pretty much refused to shut it down. We wouldn't shut it down. We're like, eh, we're just doing NATO. We're just doing NATO. So that has led to a lot of conflict. Ukraine was originally like kind of a sovereign state within the Soviet Union in a way. They had their own problems at the beginning of the 20th century, but ultimately, like, they were willing to coexist, and Russia was kind of willing to let them be sovereign. But Russia claims that it has huge historical ties to Ukraine, and that many Ukrainians are Russian in descent and in language speaking, and that Ukraine, I mean, and no, there's no evidence apparently to support this, which I'm inclined to accept that Russia was claiming that basically Ukraine was doing genocide against Russians in Ukraine. And so that was a part of their reasoning for it. But that is a history on why ultimately Ukraine being more democratic than Russia and expressing interest in joining NATO might have been very well the catalyst for this scenario. Now, ultimately, the catalyst is Vladimir Putin, but that is the reasoning, and that's something we can discuss. Maybe it's like, oh, maybe we were pushing some buttons there, but there's a lot of other things that are motivations for Russia that is just not really acknowledgeable or acceptable. And not to say that this is ex an acceptable reason for them to invade Ukraine either, but more so it's about, okay, yeah, okay, what have we done? What can we do to de-escalate the situation? But with that being said, let's go on to no, section number two. Section number two is going to be about where this started in recent times, some of the things that were said, and how it escalated to the point to where Russia is actually now invading Ukraine. So Putin has had a like had th this situation has been boiling for a while. In 2014, 15, no, 2005 and 6, there was a gas conflict between the two countries, whatever. In 2014, though, this is where it really starts to get spicy. President Zelensky was put into power in Ukraine after the Russian-backed government and president had, was hugely unliked and opposed. And so Putin had basically claimed that it's so funny because that's a similar tactic that we see in American politics today. And I wonder if he alludes to something when he does it, when it's just like, obviously, he claims that Ukraine has been Nazified. And so I think that he's kind of making fun of American leftists here. And I don't know like what leftists are like in other countries, but just like, Nazi. He, it's not Nazi-ish. Like, clearly, it's not Nazi-ish. He just doesn't like it. And so he was basically saying, leading up to it, he was saying that he wasn't going to attack Ukraine. There was a peace deal made in 2015. And so basically he was like, okay, we're not going to attack, whatever, moving troops by the border. There's like 100,000 troops by the borders. And in 2014, Crimea, a peninsula on the southeast border of Ukraine, was seized by Russia, pretty much. So, anyways, Russia's like, these guys are total Nazis, and the way that they're being, we just can't. It's a threat to our security. And Ukraine had expressed interest in joining NATO, like I said, and Russia was like, hell no, you guys can't join NATO. And he basically said, if they do join NATO, or if anyone does anything, like, we'll admit, maybe we might lose in a war, but we have the largest nuclear arsenal on the planet, and any country that gets involved or allows Ukraine in the NATO will feel a fury that their country has never felt before. Something around those lines. So we're just kind of sitting there like, yeah, well, we don't want the world to end because of a nuclear war. Like, we just don't. So, yeah, we just don't. Just doesn't seem legit. Doesn't seem like a good time. So we're like, nah. And Russia, they moved like 10,000 troops or so away from the border a few days ago before the invasion. And then they moved like way more troops there, and then they actually invaded. They were going after. Yeah, I mean, you know how the military strategy goes. They were going after hotspots. They were going after all this stuff. But this is kind of a shorter section, I guess. Basically, we have that huge historical buildup. We have Russia say that these two parts. Oh gosh, let's see if I can pronounce these right. Luhansk and Donetsk. Regions of you of eastern southern, southeastern almost basically Ukraine, more eastern but kind of south, more eastern, very more eastern. We're independent because they were kind of occupied by pro-Russians and a lot of those Russian people that Putin had made the claim that were being genocided. He basically declared them independent, and when he was like, yeah, we recognize these as not part of Ukraine. I think that's when people were kind of like, no crap. He's actually gonna do it, huh? I thought he was bluffing. Like I said, I really, truly thought that this guy was bluffing. I did not think that he was gonna do it. And then next thing wake up the next day, that pretty much happens. And there I mean, Russia's got troops around, I mean, in Belarus, I mean, literally everywhere from like, other than the very west and southwest sides of Ukraine. I mean, they are moving troops, and so Ukraine is getting invaded by this point. I think this is 3 or 4 days ago. At this point, I am recording this on Saturday night, Saturday the 26th. And as I am recording this, we are just like 2 hours away from the sun rising in Ukraine. So there may be more updates. And that might be interesting to conflict, right? But anyways, I'm getting into military strategy now. So I will mesh this all into one part. I'm not going to actually divide it up. I'm going to mesh this all into one part. Russia is striking. You know, they're going after airports. They're going after military bases. Russia had claimed to have air superiority, but I mean, what do we really know? I mean, what do we really know? Now, some of you may have heard of the legend. I don't know if that sounds good. I don't know if you guys could really hear that the effect I wanted to have you guys hear. I'm gonna try this again. Some of you may have heard of the legend of the ghost of Kyiv. Apparently, now we don't really know this. This is why it's a legend. But apparently, there is a fighter pilot for the Ukrainian defense that has won six dogfights or aerial attacks against Russian invaders. I mean, this guy's beaten the ace. And I don't really, I mean, this is a legend, of course. But it's a popular one. And it gives the people some dang hope. As far as I'm concerned, I believe that as of Saturday the 26th, this is the third day of the invasion. Just about to go on to the fourth, as the sun is about to rise in Ukraine. This is the second night Kyiv is expected to fall. And I want to make sure I can have the freshest. Okay, I got to go to a different source because this is not giving me what I need. Now, while I'm looking at this, this is trending in politics. Apparently, 62% of Americans say that of voters say that Putin wouldn't have invaded Ukraine if Trump were president. Frankly, like I'm not gonna blame this on Biden necessarily. I think this is just kind of happenstance, but I agree. And frankly, I think that's just because Putin knows that Trump is crazy enough to pull the trigger. And I got called a hack because of that. But I mean, let's be real here. Putin knows that Trump is crazy enough to pull the trigger. I mean, he does not care. He does not care. I mean, Trump is the same way as Putin. I mean, we will all freaking die before, you know, the United States' integrity is compromised. So, I mean, Trump would have, I mean, Trump's crazy enough to pull the trigger, and I think Putin knows that. So, yeah, I do. I probably do think that Russia wouldn't be invading Ukraine if Trump were president, but I mean, who really knows? And I don't think it's necessarily for a good reason, you know, because I don't think we should be pulling the trigger. But I'm just saying that I don't think this situation would be happening right now. Because I'm a non-interventionist. I don't think Trump should pull the trigger. I'm an isolationist, but, you know. Anyways, I was totally not. Let's see. Oh my gosh. So as I am doing this episode, I learned that Governor Cox of Utah, of course, if you're not in Utah listening to this, Governor Cox is our governor here in Utah. I'm glad that I can throw in just a little smidge bit of Utah in here. Governor Cox is said all because here in Utah the liquor stores are run by the state. So all Russian and Russian branded products in state-owned liquor stores, you gotta rip them off the shelves. We're done. We're not selling it. They stand with Ukraine. They're like, screw Russia. I mean, and I don't. I mean, I think it's funny, you know. And I'm just glad that I can tie Utah into this somehow. But I mean, that I just found this out. So a little bit of good Utah news for you. Anyways, so as far as I'm seeing, Kiva's still holding up. And this is supposed to be the second night where Russia is supposed to take it over. It has been after 3 days. Russia said after 2 days, Kyiv would have fallen, and they are still holding in there. And what I got to say about this is President Zelensky, what did he do? The United States is like, dude, we'll help you. You can come here, you can flee, whatever. And he was like, nah, bruh. Puts on body armor, picks up a rifle, and fights with his countrymen. That's what I'm talking about. Like, that is a public servant right there. I mean, how many of our politicians would do that? Two, maybe three total out of how many people in Congress? I mean, come on. Come on. So, I mean, absolute Chad move. I mean, absolute Chad move. I mean, that is that. I mean, respect. I mean, absolute respect. That's what I'm talking about. And don't get me wrong, like, I don't think we should be doing sanctions necessarily, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But that doesn't mean that I can't boost the morale of Ukraine. Because ultimately, the libertarian principles are the principles of nonviolence. And I do not believe that Russia is possibly in the right. So I will send my moral support to Ukraine in whatever way I can. Some of you may be following me on Twitter. My name on Twitter is Tyson David in parentheses Utah Nationalist Reese. I've been doing that for a while. I used to do like Thomas Jefferson, Redacted. Well, for the last few months, it's been Tyson David Utah Nationalist Reese. Well, yesterday or today, I changed it to Tyson Reese Ukraine Nationalist Reese. I mean, it's the little things, I'm praying. I'm doing some other things too, but they're a bit personal and probably not as professionally appropriate, so I'm not gonna go over it on here. But Kyiv is still hanging in there. And there were supposed to be huge aerial bombardments. And Russia was supposed to be pushing. But right as about morning is about to come in Ukraine, Kyiv is hanging in there. And this is going to be published at 6 a.m. Mountain Standard Time on Sunday morning, the 27th of February. But as of right now, as of 8:40, February 26th, 8:40 p.m., Kyiv is hanging in there. They are hanging in there. So, I mean, they shut down liquor stores and distilleries to make Molotov cocktails. I mean, and as far as I've seen the equipment. I mean, Russia is very reluctant to release numbers. But the equipment damaged by the Ukrainians has been outstanding. I mean, ultimately, the estimate is that Kyiv will fall. Now, whether or not that happens, time can only tell. But apparently, the Russians were instructed to take Kyiv by Monday, no matter the cost of human life. So that means that in 24 hours in Ukraine, the sun is about to arrive on Monday. So if this is really the case and this is really what the Russian soldiers have been expected to do, we are a very brief time away from seeing what's going to unfold. But Russia has taken no major cities. They have taken the Chernobyl area. Probably not something worth fighting over too much, considering if one stray bullet hits a reactor, it could screw up so many people and things. So, I mean, maybe that's something not worth fighting in. Maybe we'll just like stand our ground somewhere else and figure it out later. But, like, anyways. So, they're hanging in there. They are doing a good job. And I gotta say, like my respect out to the people fighting for their home country in Ukraine. So, I mean, It just shows a lot. And, they're, I mean, it shows a lot. They're really hanging in there. And I gotta say, like, I have massive respect for these people. Now Russia claims to have full aerial control. That, I mean, that may or may not be the case. I don't think it is. The Ghost of Kyiv has apparently four confirmed aerial victories. So even though it's a legend, I mean, that's dang. That's crazy. He's being called the Red Baron of Ukraine. That's pretty crazy. And might I say, with this whole Ukraine nationalist thing I got going on, because I really am standing with these people. I mean, I hope they whoop Russia up and down. I mean, you got Russia out here threatening nuclear war. Like, we're gonna bully this guy, and if you screw with me, we're gonna kill everyone on the planet, basically. Because that's what it would be. I mean, everyone knows that as soon as one nuke is launched in this day and age, the planet is done for. I mean, we are screwed. So Ukraine is holding up as they can. I wonder if Russia will use nukes against them. I highly doubt it, but again, I thought Putin was bluffing. But, there was Snake Island, and a Russian warship says, "This is a Russian warship. We suggest you surrender or you will be bombed. And pardon my dang French, but the Ukrainians, all 13 of them on that island, the one guy on the telecom responded back to the Russian warship saying, 'This is a Russian warship. Surrender now, or we suggest you surrender now, or you will be bombed.' The Ukrainian responded, 'Russian warship, go fuck yourself.'" I mean, my gosh. The hype, bro, it's so real. The hype is so real, and it's well deserved too. I hope Ukraine holds on. For the love of God, I hope Ukraine holds on and repels this attack. Because what a Chad move that would be. Additionally, Russia has said that if, I believe it's something along the lines of if Finland and Sweden join NATO because of Russia invading Ukraine, they're gonna get invaded basically. So go ahead and try and invade Finland in February. See how that works out for you, pal. But anyways, and that's a historical joke. Sorry, Russia's tried it a couple times, never worked out for him. But anyways, the hype is real around Ukraine regarding that stuff, and it is well deserved. So let's go. Let's freaking go. Now on to the last section of this podcast. How does this situation mesh with libertarian principles? Now, I have a very easy answer for this to start, but I mean, how about we just like stopped pumping money into NATO? I thought that was a pretty, I mean, we should have stopped that a long time ago if we should have ever started it. We shouldn't have ever started it, but we should have stopped it a long time ago. I mean, we wouldn't have gotten involved in World War I. We wouldn't have gotten World War II. I mean, this situation wouldn't exist, most likely, if we just followed libertarian isolationist principles. But here we are. Nonetheless, here we are. NATO happened. All this stuff happened. I mean, that does us no good to be like, well, we wouldn't be in this situation if it, was for, I mean, that's not the answer people want to hear. It's the true answer. It's the most correct answer. It really is. But that answer isn't going to solve the problem that we're currently in. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. It's not going to solve it. So, what do you do? Well, you don't send troops anywhere. I mean, probably a good idea to work out some sort of deal with Russia to be like, hey, you stop invading people, we'll dissolve NATO. Huh. Okay. And this applies, I'm actually going to be writing about this soon. But this applies to libertarian philosophy in a way, and the art of incrementalism, which I'm going to be writing about, like I said. But since the state is in, since you do have these state things, you could use them to, as incentives to stop causing problems. Like, hey, we're going to do this libertarian thing and kind of get rid of NATO, but we want you to stop invading other countries. I think that might have been able to prevent Russia from joining or from invading Ukraine to start. Maybe, maybe not, but now it's worth a try to negotiate. And at this point, it's like, okay, well, we can try and negotiate it now. That's one option while we're here. This is something I'd add. This next solution, I mean, sanctions are better than putting troops on the ground, right? Like, I don't agree with sanctions, but it's obviously better than putting troops on the ground. I'm for diplomacy, but I don't know how out the window that is. But I'm for diplomacy. And I think that frankly, like, if no one's willing to listen to your offer, you're probably not making a good enough offer. I'm sure that Russia would be super interested in standing down if we got rid of NATO. I mean, it's just practical. But there's a few other things that I've heard that are consistent with libertarian principles, other than sanctions. Now, the first thing is, and I have advocated to the governor for this, but we should be open to taking in Ukrainian refugees. Absolutely. I mean, that is, we are a refuge from totalitarian governments and from government violence. We are supposed to be the place where people can go to just live their lives and live in the land of the free. So, we for sure should be willing to accept Ukrainian refugees. Absolutely. With, like, without a shadow of a doubt. For sure. So, you know, we have that. And I've been advocating to Governor Cox. Yeah, we need to take Ukrainian refugees. Like, we really do. We need to take Ukrainian refugees. And I hope we do. That's one libertarian solution. Now, another is offering Russian workers in trades and technology, specifically technology, visas to the United States to work so they can leave Russia. That would completely deplete Russia's economy. It would incredibly bolster ours, so far that it worked. But this is not a popular war. This is Putin's war. This is not Russia's war. This is Putin's war. It's about the pride of the leader. That's what Russia has always demonstrated. It is about the, that's what the nation, that's what the government of Russia, that is what the government of Russia has always displayed. It is about the pride of the leader. So, I mean, it could work. That's another solution. Is trying to get those IT guys here. Now, you want to know something really cool? Anonymous, and it, for those of you that haven't heard of Anonymous, Anonymous has been a humanist hacking organization that has been exposing corruption in a lot of ways. So, Anonymous has declared cyber war on Russia. I wonder how many of those people are from Russia. And they said it in tweets. These are some of your own people. But the Kremlin website has been down. Let's see. Kremlin.ru. Let me search it up just to be sure. I don't know if this is my internet being slow. Maybe .gov? No, that's not coming up with anything. Kremlin.ru. Okay, let's try a different tab. Let's see. Pulls it up on the Google search. Click on the tab. That's not working. All right, let's see if this is my internet, because I don't think it is. Let's go to whitehouse.gov. Whitehouse.gov pulls right up. Search up Kremlin.ru. Oh, after a long time of loading, let's see. I had something and then I accidentally clicked the back arrow. I'm gonna let it sit here for a minute. Okay, can't reach it. Let's reload it, just to be sure. Anonymous, this hacking group, has disabled like their defense and Kremlin.ru. So they've declared cyber war on Russia. I mean, let's go. If there is any, I mean, that is libertarian as hell. Let's freaking go. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, these guys are sticking it to them. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, oh, as a libertarian, I mean, the idea of this private organization declaring cyber war on an aggressor, on a physical aggressor, I mean, ha! That's money! That's money in the bank! I mean, how much better does it get? I mean, let's be honest. Anonymous is basically like the ultimate libertarian solution to the problem. I mean, this is a huge example. And who knows what kind of factor these guys could play in it? I mean, for all I know, they could disable their nukes. I mean, I have no idea how good these guys are. But my goodness, there are so many fronts. I mean, oh my gosh, forgive me, Lord, for saying this on the podcast. If you are sensitive to sexually explicit things, I suggest you don't listen for the next 10 seconds, starting at 15 now. So Pornhub has basically gotten rid of all, like, people in Russia can't access it. So that's another thing. So you have Anonymous, you have the other thing that I just mentioned, just in case people wanted to cover their ears for that. But I mean, holy cow. I mean, and the protests in Russia against this are huge, apparently. In all sorts of different cities. And, you know, Russia being as totalitarian as they are, they're, you know, kind of fighting against it and locking things up. But my goodness. I mean, other than, oh my gosh, and I just want to say this real quick. China's trying to pull the same kind of stunt with Taiwan. And China, I hope you get just as much as Russia's got coming into them if you do the same thing with Taiwan. Freaking screw you guys. I almost don't like Taiwan more, or I almost don't, I love Taiwan, don't get me wrong. I almost don't like China as much as I don't like Russia. And it's not even that I don't like Russia. I think Russia's really cool, actually. And I would have loved to have gone to Russia sometime. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. But Putin, I mean, there's his documentaries, and I mean, this guy's screwed up. We'll just say that. I mean, this guy is screwed up. I mean, he's like Stalin, but low key and in modern times. I mean, Putin is screwed up. So, you know, China's got this whole thing going with Taiwan. Hopefully that doesn't, you know, hopefully they get what Russia has coming to them. But holy cow. I mean, all of these fronts, Russia's got a crack. Right? I mean, Russia's got a crack. This is a pivotal time because ultimately it shows who's going to win out. The good guys or the bad guys. And we're not, I mean, let's be honest. This isn't about propaganda. Right, we're seeing through that. That's what we do here at Utah Liberty Talk. We see through the propaganda. Ultimately, there are two aspects about Russia, China, and North Korea, those three strong alliances, those three strong allies. They are totalitarian, authoritarian, they don't have any sort of free market, and they are aggressors. And they are violent to their own people and in making threats to other nations. That's how we know this is good versus evil. They are the aggressors. They are the totalitarians. They are the people that are controlling every aspect of their people's lives, and some more than others, between those three nations. And they are the people that want to seize more power. So, that's how we know. Because some people will say, oh, this is Western propaganda. We understand as libertarians and as people that are liberty-minded, as humans, that aggressing upon people is wrong. That's what makes them the bad guys. Now, we've aggressed upon people too in the United States. Don't get me wrong. I mean, and where that happens, I've always advocated for us knocking it off. But I mean, in this day and age, a full-scale invasion of another country. My gosh.